Masechet Baba Kama Daf Kof He. Chutz mipachot shaveh peruta bekeren, we learned in the Mishnah. If someone steals $100 and then he swears falsely about it and then he admits the truth, he has to pay back not only the principal of the $100, but also he has to add a surcharge that in total, the surcharge will be a fifth of the entire amount, meaning he has to add $25. And not only that, the robber has to go and, if he wants to get atonement, which we assume he wants to get, he has to go and find the robber, no matter where the victim were at, no matter where he is, and return it to his hand. And only then can he get his atonement and bring his korban. Now, in a case where he paid the entire surcharge of $25, and he paid all of the principal except for less than a peruta. Well, in that case, less than a peruta is an insignificant amount, and so the Mishnah teaches he does not have to return that less than a peruta, and at the other end of the earth, he does not have to go through any extra trouble to return that. It's insignificant, and he can attain atonement even without returning that. That was the Mishnah taught. We're going to elaborate. Amar Papa. לא שנו אלא שאין גזלה קיימת, אבל גזלה קיימת צריך ללך אחריו, חשינן שמה תייקר. Says this law only applies if the original stolen item is not around. And they were talking about just the monetary value of it, so the monetary value of less than a peruta, you can't even pay it. There is no denomination that small. However, if the stolen item is still around, for example, let's say he stole two figs, and each one's worth a half a peruta. So he stole a peruta's worth of figs. And now he went and he returned one of the figs. But now he has one. Well, this item is less than half a peruta. But it exists. He still has it. He didn't eat it. In that case, you have to go find him and give back that other fig. Why? Because Rapapa says maybe it will go up in price. Maybe all of a sudden the price of figs will double, and now this the stolen item that you have will be worth a peruta. And since that is a possibility, we want to make sure that you go and return the fig to him and go even travel to find him. That's one version. Ika da amir amar Rapapa, lo shena gizela kayemet, lo shena en shen gizela kayemet, eno sarich lelech acharav, l'shema tiyaker lo chashinan. This is the exact opposite of the first one, that it does not matter whether the original stolen item is around or it's no longer around in either case, if the amount or the item itself is worth less than a peruta, the robber does not have to go and chase after and travel to return it, because we don't worry about it becoming higher in value and being worth a peruta. Right now, it's worth less than a peruta. It's insignificant. Forget about it, and you can achieve atonement without that. Okay, that's Rapapa's halacha. Now, a related halacha in the name of Rava, Amar Rava, Gazal Shalosh Agudot, B'Shalosh Pirutot, V'Huzlu V'Amdu Al Shitayim. Someone stole three bundles of something, let's say three bundles of mint. And at that time, they were worth three pirutot, one piruta each bundle. In the meantime, it went down in value. And now all three are worth two. So each one's worth only two-thirds of a peruta. And then he made teshuvah, and he returned two of them. So he returned two-thirds. He still has one bundle of mint that's only worth two-thirds of a peruta. Rava says he has to return it. This is not only agreeing with the first version of Rav Papa, it actually is going a step further, because in this case, he actually returned part of the item, and that part of the item that he returned is even worth a peruta, because two of them is four-thirds of a peruta worth. So he did an act of returning. So you could say, I fulfilled my obligation to return. No, nevertheless, you still owe something else. You still, even though it's less than the peruta, what you still have in your hand, it exists, it's there, it still exists in its original form. You have to return it. So here, Rava also would say that when the Mishnah says that you don't have to return less than the peruta, that's only if it's a monetary value. But the thing itself, you have to return, even if you already returned the part of it that's worth more than the peruta. V'tana tuna, and we're further going to bring a Mishnah that proves this. This is true. Mishnah from earlier in the Masechet, Gazal Chametz v'Avad Alav HaPesach, Omer Lo, Hare Shelcha Lefanecha. If someone stole a loaf of bread, and then it didn't return it until after Pesach, but he owned it the whole time over, during Pesach. So this is Chamesh Avad Alav HaPesach, and one is not allowed to eat or get or benefit, buy or sell this loaf of bread, and therefore has no value. It's just like dust. So you might have thought, well, when he stole the item, this loaf of bread was worth $5. Maybe he has to return $5 because that's the monetary value. The Mishnah taught us, no, he doesn't have to. If the bread is still there, still around, then he can simply return the bread itself and say, well, this is what I stole from you, and it's not my problem that now you have no use for it. I'm returning this stolen item and as is. We can infer from the Mishnah that the only reason he can return the bread is because it exists in the same state that it was. But let's say he ate the bread or went bad. And now, even though right now, after Pesach, the bread is not worth anything, since it was worth something at the time that he stole it, so now he has to pay, right? If he stole bread and then it's no longer in existence, and now it's after Pesach, he has to pay the monetary value of the bread at the time that he stole it. Even though if the bread existed, he could give back. He could just give the bread, and there's no value there. The robber can say, "Well, if I had the bread, I could have given it to you and gotten off the hook and not paid anything, and that was worth it was worth zero. Therefore, I don't have to pay you." No, he can't say that. He still has to pay the monetary value. Ha'chaname afagav dashtad la shave piruta kivan demekara have shave piruta ba'en shalume. In this case, also we can prove the Rava's ruling, since when he stole the three bundles of mint, each one of them was worth one piruta. So now he returned two of them, and they became cheaper. And now they're only worth 2/3 of a piruta. So now the robber has one bundle of mint left that's worth less than a piruta. So even though right now it's not worth a piruta, so he might think that, well, it's insignificant. He doesn't have to return it. Therefore, just like the chametz, even though it was insignificant, he has to return it. And if he doesn't have it, he'll have to pay the monetary value of what it was originally. So too here, even though right now the bundle of mint is only worth 2/3 of a piruta, since it was once upon a time worth a whole piruta, therefore he has to return the bundle of mint. Good. Ba'erava. Gazal shete agudot bifruta vechazir lo achat mehen. Mahu. What if the robber stole two bundles of mint, and they were worth a piruta altogether? So they never were worth. Each bundle of mint was never worth a piruta by itself. So when he stole them, so they're worth half a piruta each, and he returned one of them, and so now he has the other one left. What do we say? Mi amrinan hashtaleka gezela. Do we say there is no stolen item here? It's true. He's holding a bundle of mint that's worth a half a peruta, but a half a peruta is significant. It never was worth a peruta. It is not worth a peruta now. There is no stolen item, and therefore, what can he return? Do we say that? Or do we say, yeah, but remember, he stole two, and he didn't do an act of returning. He did not return the stolen item that was in his possession. He stole two bundles, and he only returned one, so he didn't do an act of returning. So he has to return the other one. That was his question. Hadar Peshata, and he figured out the answer himself. Gezela en kan, hashaba en kan. This statement is difficult to decipher. He said, there is no stolen item. There is no returning. Now, what does this mean? We ask. Gezela en kan, hashaba yeshkan, hashaba yeshkan. If there is no stolen item, then that means that he did an act of returning. Right? Rava, this doesn't make sense what you said. You said, There's no stolen item, but there's no returning. That doesn't make sense. If the robber has no stolen item, then that means he did return it, because otherwise, where is it? So we re-explain. No, this is what Rava meant to say. Hachika amar, afal pi shegezela enkan, misvat hashava enkan. Even though the robber does not have a stolen item, because he only has one mint bundle worth half a peruta, that's insignificant, so he has no significant stolen item in his hand. Nevertheless, there also was no mitzvah of returning because he only returned half of what he stole. So he didn't fulfill returning. And therefore, what this bottom line means is that he does have to return the other half. Even though he doesn't have anything to return, he doesn't have anything significant to return. Nevertheless, he didn't actually fulfill returning. So he does have to return the other half. And then once he returns both of them, then we say, oh, you did mitzvah tashava. And then he's good to go. And he can achieve his atonement. All right, so a similar halacha that Rava taught there, we're going to teach in the next on a different subject, but it's a kind of a similar dilemma. V'ama Rava, hare amru, nazir she'gileach v'shiyer sh'te se'arot, lo asa ve'lo chilum. Someone who becomes a nazir, when he's finished, part of the part of the ending ritual is he has to shave all the hair of his entire body. Every single one. If he left two, he shaved his whole body except for two hairs, it's worth zero. It's not considered shaving. If he left only one hair, that would be considered okay. Right? He left one, that's considered negligible. That's like less than equivalent to less than a peruta. Now, that is the halacha. Now, Rava taught. But now, Rava has a follow-up question. By Rava. Gileach achat v'nashra achat mahu. What if he shaved his whole body down to two? So far, he hasn't done anything halachically significant because there's still two hairs. So that's considered he's still hairy. And then, of the last two, he shaved one, and then the last one fell off by itself. What do we say about that? Is that considered that he shaved, and now he can finish being a nazir? Or not. The consequences of not is that since he has no hair, but technically he didn't shave both of the last ones, so he didn't do an act of shaving, is that if you say it's no good, then he would have to wait 30 days to grow new hair and shave it and then shave it. But he would have to be a nazir for another 30 days. Okay, so what do we say about this case? Amar le Rav Acha midivti le Ravina. Nazir shegileach achat, kami baya le Rava. Rav Acha says, is Rava asking a question about a nazir who shaves one hair at a time? Isn't that obvious that would be okay? And this case is the same as that case, because here he shaved his whole body except for two, and then of the last two, he shaved one first, so now he's down to one. And one is okay, right? One hair is insignificant. So the problem here is just that when you shave, usually you're shaving a lot at the same time. But here, okay, he's doing one by one. All right, he wants to take all day to do that. That's his prerogative. But that would be fine. That would not be a question of Rava. So it can't be Rava was asking that question in that order. Rather, other way around. For the Nazir, he shaved off all the hair of his body except for two, which so far did nothing halachically significant. But then, of the last two, the first one fell out on its own. He didn't shave it. And only the last one he shaved. So, what do we do in this case? Do we say, yeah, but right now, there is no measurement of hair that's significant, even though the last one fell out. And so now he has just one hair, which is not significant. And then he shaved that one. But right now, it doesn't matter. The fact that he it fell out by itself doesn't matter. The point is that he doesn't have any hair on his body, except for one. And one is not significant anyway. And he shaved it anyway. So it's fine. As long as he has no hair, it's okay. And he can end his nazirut. Or is this not considered an act of shaving? Because when he shaved his whole body except for two, he still has two. So that's still called hairy. That's not considered a fulfillment of the obligation. And then after one fell off, he doesn't have two anymore, and you can't do an act of shaving with less than two. It's kind of like writing on Shabbat. It's not called writing if you write one letter, only if you write two letters. It's not considered an act of shaving unless you cut two hairs, and one fell off of the last two first, and there's only one left. And so he can't, there's nothing to shave. He can't fulfill shaving anymore. He has to wait till it regrows in 30 days, and then shave it afterwards. Which way? What's the answer? What do we say? Hadar pishata rava. Figure that the answer himself. Se'ad en kan, giluach en kan. There is no hair, and there is no act of shaving. Again, similar phraseology that's equally confusing. So we ask, "I se'ad en kan, giluach yeshkan." What do you mean? If there's no hair, then that means there is an act of shaving. Why would? What do you mean? Hachik amad afa pishes se'ad en kan, misvat giluach en kan. What Rava meant is, even though he has no hair on his body, still he did not fulfill the commandment of shaving. The commandment isn't just to have no hair on your body. The commandment is to shave. And that is defined as the last two hairs is what accomplishes that shaving. And he didn't shave both of the last hairs because the first one fell off. And therefore, he's going to have to wait 30 days and then do it in the right way. Ve'amar Rava. Yet another statement of Rava followed up by a question. If you have a jar made out of clay, the law of a jar made out of clay is that if it's in a room with a corpse, so corpse impurity fills up the whole room as an ohel. If the jar is open, then anything in the jar will be tameh. But if the jar is closed and sealed shut with no holes, then anything in the jar is protected. So now we have a case of a jar that had a hole in it at one time, but then the sediments from the wine that it had in there piled up and sealed. It created a seal for the jar. So that's good enough, even though it once upon a time had a hole. But now that it's filled up, even though it's just with sediments, you save everything in the jar. If afterwards someone dies in that room, the contents will be saved. That's Rava's law. But now he has a question. Bayrava agaf hetzia mahu. What if you had a jar that had a hole in it and you sealed up half of the hole? On the one hand, there's a minimum size. If it's a tiny, tiny hole, that's okay. So on the one hand, if you have a jar that's totally sealed, it gets a tiny hole, we don't consider that anything. It's like a half a peruta, and so that would be okay. So would we call this the same thing? Even though it had a bigger hole, but now you sealed half, and now it's a tiny hole, so it's okay. Or do we say, once it gets a hole, so now the only way to fix it is to completely seal it up, right? Like a lot of times, once there's a if it's a tiny problem, it's okay. But once it becomes a big problem, you have to solve it all together. You can't just solve it halfway anymore. So what do we say about this? Rav Yamar says, this is our very Mishnah, the one that you quoted from Masechet Kelim, that you started with, Hare Amru. You quoted this halacha. So look at the rest of that very Mishnah. Titnan. Chavit shenikeva ustamuha shemarim. Hisiluha pekaka bizmora ad shemarech. Hayuba shetayim. Ad shemarech minasedadim. Uben zemora lechavirta. Mishnah says, if you have a jar and had a hole, but the sediment closes it up, you saved the stuff in the jar. Good. If it got a hole and you plug it up with a vine, that's not good enough. You have to also smear clay around it to fully seal it. And if you put two vines in it, also, not only do you have to seal all around the vines, but even between the two vines. So you see from here that it needs a full seal. Once it gets a hole in it, it's not sufficient to seal it up halfway, right? Tama de marach halo marach lo amai vetevek yagaf chetzia. So Rav Yamar tells Rava, why don't you learn the answer from this very Mishnah, the continuation of the Mishnah that you quoted? The only reason why it's good if he puts a vine in it is because he put clay around it and sealed it up altogether. Isn't that the same as the case if he seals half of the hole? It's no good. Only he has to put clay all around the hole, fill it entirely in order for it to be kosher. So can't you figure out the answer from there? And we say, no, you couldn't. Amri hachi hashta, the two cases are not the same. Hatam ki ilo marach laka'e. Agaf chetzia b'midi deka'e ka'e. In the case of the Mishnah, when you're just sticking a vine in it, if you don't put clay, it's not going to stay in place. So it's just going to fall out. That's no good. That's not considered even filling half of it. That's considered nothing. But if you fill half of it with proper clay, that will remain in place. well, then that's a real, that's permanent, and that will stay in place. And so we leave the question open, just like this clay jar. We're not sure if it's closed or open anymore, so we leave the question open as well. Another law that Ava brings, and then asks a question on it. Hare amru, gazal hametz v'abad alav ha-pesach, omer lo hare shelcha lefanecha. He's quoting the Mishnah earlier that says if you steal chametz before Pesach, it's worth $5 when you stole it. But then the robber owns it on Pesach, and now it's worth nothing. Nevertheless, the robber can return the bread as is. All right, here's what I stole. Here it is back. Not my problem that you can't use it now. Here's the follow-up question by Rava. Nishba alav mahu. What if the robber, after Pesach, he stole it before Pesach. After Pesach, he also swears falsely. He says, I never stole it. But then he admits that, yes, I did steal it. What do we say about that? Does he have to pay an added fifth and bring an asham? On the one hand, you could say yes, because even though the item right now is not worth anything, but it's worth potential money, because should the bread get stolen, then the robber will have to pay $5 out of his pocket. So since it's potential money, we consider it like money, and he's swearing falsely about like money that he owes, and therefore he has to pay a fifth and pay and give an asham. Or do we say, look, right now it's here and it's worth zero, it's like dust of the earth, and therefore when he denied and swore falsely, he's it's not about a monetary claim, because it's just about this pile of dust that happens to look like bread, but that you can't use, and therefore he should not have to bring an asham or pay anything for it. Good question. Milta de ba'aya le'rava, peshita le'rava. Now, although Rava, the student from the fourth generation Amora, had a question about this, his teacher, Rabba, and the third generation of Babylonian Amoraim, he thought this was a simple question. He had an answer to it. Amar Rabba, Shori ganavta, v'hu omer lo ganavti. Here's the following statement of Rabba. If a victim comes and says, you stole my ox, and the robber says, denies, no, I didn't steal it. Now, mati vos lecha. So then the owner of the ox says, well, then what is it doing in your property, in your field, right? If it's my ox, why do you have it in your courtyard? So the robber comes up with a good excuse. Shomer chinam ani alav. So he says, oh, you gave it to me to watch for free. I was watching for you as an unpaid custodian. And he swore about that, lying. And then turns out actually he stole it. So does he have to pay the extra fifth and asham? Chayav, yes, he does. Why? Even though he admitted that it's not his, right? He said, listen, this is your, the guy comes and says, you stole it. He says, no, I didn't steal it. I was watching it for you, right? And so, therefore, he's admitting, the robber is admitting that it belongs to the owner. So he's ready to give it back. So technically, he didn't steal anything. He did steal anything, but he's not denying that he owes the ox to the owner, right? He's ready and willing to give the ox because his claim is only, I was watching it for you, and so here it is. I'm returning it to you. So he's not denying that he owes it. So then why should he have to pay a fifth and add an asham? Because Share Patar Asmo Begineva Aveda, he did get potential monetary gain. If it would be stolen or lost, as a shomer chinam, he would not be liable. But as a thief, he would be liable. If a thief steals something and then it gets stolen from him, or the thief loses it, he has to still pay what he stole. He can't say, oh, I know I stole your ox, but sorry, I lost it. I can't pay you. I'm not going to pay it back. No. So therefore, the shomer chinam, if it would be lost, he wouldn't have to pay, even though that didn't actually happen, but potentially it could happen after that point. So we see from here that a potential monetary gain is considered a monetary gain for the purpose that if you swear falsely, about it, then you still have to bring in asham. Similarly, shomer sachar ani alav chayav share patar atzmo mishivura u'meta. Same scenario. The guy comes, says, "You stole my ox." The other one says, "I didn't steal it." He says, "Well, what is it doing in your property?" "Oh, I was a paid bailey. You paid me to watch it. And so, yeah, I'm going to return it." So even though he is admitting that he's going to return the ox, he's not claiming that he should keep the ox. Nevertheless, he is liable for swearing falsely and bringing asham because he excused himself from a case where it would break or died. A shomer sachar does not have to, even though he's getting paid, so he has to make sure it doesn't get lost or stolen, and would be responsible if it does. But if it breaks or dies, a shomer sachar is not responsible, but a robber is responsible. So by saying, making this claim, he was exempting himself from the potential payment that he would have to give. And therefore, we see again, potential payment is like payment. Shoel ani alav hayav share patar asmo mimeta mechamat melacha. And similarly, if the robber claims that I was borrowing it, but I'm going to give it back to you, nevertheless, he is liable because he exempted himself from a case where it dies during while he's using it. Someone who borrows something without having to pay for it is liable for most things, except that, you know, if I borrow your lawnmower and it breaks while I'm using it in the act of using, normal usage, then the borrower is not responsible. So here also, this guy, he's a thief. And if it would break from use, then he would, according to his false swear, he would not be liable. And therefore, he is gaining potential money. And so you see, potential money is like money for this purpose. Alma afagav dehakaim, kevan de'im igniv amonaka kafar, hashtaname mamonaka kafar, hachaname afagav de'afra ba'almahu, kevan de'im igniv, ba'eshalume le mamona ba'alya, hashtaname mamonaka kafar le. And now we close the Rabbah's argument, and we see, therefore, even though the ox right now is here, and he can return it to its owner, but if it would be stolen and he was a shomer chinam, then he would not have to pay and the owner would lose out. So therefore, would lose out. And so therefore, he has to pay the asham because he is denying a monetary claim. Even though there's no existing monetary claim right now, he's denying potentially a monetary claim that could come about. So too, the same thing here with the chametz. Even though right now the chametz is like dust of the earth, has no value. Nevertheless, if it would be stolen, then the robber would have to pay $5 for the amount, the cost, the value of the bread at the time that he stole it. And so if it would get stolen, then based on this false swear that he didn't steal it, the owner of the bread would lose out on that $5. So even though that didn't happen, the bread wasn't stolen, it's here and he can return it as is with no value, nevertheless, it's considered a false vow that requires atonement and requires an asham. Okay, brilliant proof comparing these two different cases. Yativ Rava v'kamar lehashimata. So Rava was repeating this very halakha that we just mentioned. He's repeating the proof that Rava had taught. And then he got a challenge. Itibe Rav Amram le Rava. Rav Amram challenges him from the following baraita that says, v'chichesh ba. Someone who steals and swears falsely about a monetary claim only has to bring the fifth and asham if he denied the payment, but this excludes someone who admits to the main part of the claim, right? As long as he admits that the main principle that he is claimed he really owes, then even if he swears falsely about some other aspect of it, he doesn't have to bring in asham. What are we talking about? Kesad, shori ganavta v'lo omer lo ganavti. Same scenario as before. The owner of an ox comes and says, you stole my ox. The robber says, I didn't steal it. Mativo astecha. The owner says, well, why is it in your courtyard? And the robber makes up an excuse and swears about it. And he says, Ata mechartoli. Ata natata netanoli bematana. Avicha mechartoli. Avicha netanoli bematana. The robber says, you sold it to me, or you gave it to me as a gift. Your father sold it to me. Your father gave it to me as a gift. Now, in these cases, actually, he's denying the very claim, because if he bought it or got it as a present, he's going to keep it. We're going to come back to these cases and explain in what way he's admitting to the principle. Okay, but let's focus on the next ones. Achad parati ras me'elav ba itzli toy baderech masati mesativ. These are all similar. It says your ox. It was running after my cow, and it ran into my courtyard. I didn't steal it. It came here by itself. Or it was wandering around and came here, or it got lost, and I found it, and I brought it to my courtyard to safeguard it so I could return it to its proper owner. I didn't steal it. So see, in all these cases, he's admitting that it's not his, right? It was just here because it wandered off here. Oh, it's yours? Great, right? Then take it. So in this case, even if he swears falsely that he didn't steal it, but rather it wandered by itself, and therefore he's going to give it to the owner. He's admitting that it belongs to the owner. In these cases, he does not have to bring an asham, right? Because his false swear is not trying to keep the animal. He's admitting to the main principle. Similarly, shomer chinam ani alav, shomer sachar ani alav, shoel ani alav, v'nishba v'hoda yachol yeh chayav, tamod omar, v'chichesh ba perat l'modeh be'ikar. Or, and this is the question, here's the question comes, these are the same cases that Rabbah had cited. If he says, I was unpaid custodian. I was a paid custodian. I was borrowing it, but I admit it's yours, right? And I'm going to give it back to you. And he swore falsely because really he stole it. Would he be liable to bring in Hashem? And the answer is no, he is not liable, because Pasuk says, Kichesh ba, he deals falsely with it, but this exempts a robber who admits that he owes the primary items. In all these cases, he's admitting that he really has to give it to him. So here's the question. In this Braita, it says that when the robber denies and swears falsely and says, I was a shomer, he does not have to bring an asham. This goes against Rabbah, because Rabbah says he does have to bring an asham, because even though it's potential money is like money, and potentially he could have gotten off the hook if it was stolen or lost. And therefore, he does have to bring an asham. Here is a baraita that contradicts the ruling of Rabbah. And now Rava is going to answer for him. Amar le tedura. Rava calls Rav Amram a fool. Pretty harsh criticism. Sounds like a good question. So he explains, no, this is a bad question. Kitanya hi de kamar le helach ki kamina de kaima ba'agam. That baraita is talking about a case where as soon as the owner of the ox comes and says, right, so what are you doing with it if it's mine? And he says, oh, I was a shomer. Here it is. I'm giving back to you right away. Right? So since he returns it or offers to return it immediately at the same time that he makes this false vow, I swear I didn't steal it. I was just a shomer. Here it is. So since he returned it immediately, that's it. He admitted to the main principle. And so his swear will have no effect even on a potential monetary claim, because he's giving it back immediately. So that's it. There's no possibility that's going to get lost or stolen. When I made that halacha, Rabbah speaking for Rabbah, right? Ki kamina, when Rabbah said that he is liable to make to bring in asham, that's where the robber was hiding it in a swamp and was not yet returning it, right? And he was saying, oh, you gave it to me to borrow, to use. I'm still using it. I still have it. It's somewhere. I'll find it one day, right? I'll get it back to you. Well, in the meantime, from the time he takes the swear on that day until he eventually ends up returning it, it could get lost. It could get stolen. And then the robber would potentially have a gain based on his claim that he didn't steal it, that he was just watching it. And so therefore he has to bring in Hashem because of that potential gain. And so it is still a good proof, and we resolve the question. All right, we resolve the question. We just want to clarify the Braita, the first cases. If the robber says, you sold it to me, then it sounds like the robber is saying, it's mine, I'm going to keep it. So how is that admitting to the principal? No, we're talking about a case where he says, you sold it to me, but I didn't pay yet. So therefore, since I didn't pay yet, you know what? Take the ox back. I'm not going to pay. Right? You just take it back. So therefore, there really was no monetary claim because he offered it. He offered to give it back immediately. What about the case where he says I gave as a present? Here, there's no money to be paid anyway. So if the robber says you gave it to me as a present, isn't he trying to keep it for himself? And therefore, he should have to bring in Hashem. So in a case where at the time of the gift, the owner said, here, take this as a gift on condition that you do something for me. I said, I'll take it on condition that I do something for you. And I never did you a favor, so therefore the gift was null and void, never was a gift, it's really yours, take it. That's what he said, and he swore about that. So he was not going to gain anything in any case, by his false swear, that's why he doesn't have to bring in Hashem. What kind of excuses? It was lost, and I found it. I wanted to safeguard it for the person who lost it. Then the owner could say, well, then you should have returned it to me. What are you doing holding it if you really were? We're returning it as a lost item. A case where he makes a vow, the robber makes a false vow and says, oh, it was a lost item, but I didn't know that it was yours. That's why I couldn't return it to you. That's why I had it. But now that I know it's yours, here, take it. And he returns it right away. So therefore, his false swear is not gaining him any money because he's returning the item anyway, and so he does not have to pay a fifth or bring an asham. Now that we talked about the false oath of a robber, we're going to talk about a different type of false oath called shivuat ha'edut, which means if someone testifies that I don't know anything about this case, they testify, but it turns out that they're lying. They actually did have information about the case, so that person has to bring an ole vioded, a sliding scale sin offering, depending on how rich or poor that person is. Tanya, Amar ben Azai, shalosh shivuoten. So ben Azai says there are three types of false swears within this category. And these three are within the subcategory of testifying about a lost item. Some guy lost his cow. And so he's going around, hey, do you know anything about my lost cow? And that person says, no, I don't know anything about it. I want you to swear to that. He says, okay, so I swear I don't know anything about your lost cow. I have no information. But it turns out he's lying. In fact, he saw the cow and he recognized, oh, that's that guy's cow. The problem is that he didn't know who the finder was. In other words, he saw someone find that cow. Someone had the cow with him, but he doesn't remember who it was. So that information is not so useful. It's like, yeah, I saw your cow with someone, but I don't know who it was. Although it still might be useful because the fact that he saw it somewhere, right, might lead to a clue. In any case, he lies and says, I don't know anything about it. Or the other way around, he says, I know that guy found something. He told me he found something, but I don't know what he found. I don't know if it was a cow or a sheep or a watch. I don't know what he found. So I know someone found something, and he doesn't, this all information also, it's not very useful because who knows what he found. I don't know if he found this cow, but nevertheless, it could be useful because, well, go ask him, did you find the cow? So it could lead to something helpful. In any case, he denies that he knows anything altogether, and then it turns out he's lying. Lo ba velo bemosa, the guy doesn't know anything. He doesn't know the item found. He doesn't recognize, and he doesn't recognize the finder. So he doesn't actually know anything about it. We ask about the last case. Lo ba velo masa kushta ishtaba. Wait, if in fact the guy who swears didn't see a lost item and didn't know who found it, well, then he's being truthful when he says, I don't know anything about it. So that can't be the case. Emma ba ubamosa. No, what do you, we have to change the words. What he really means is that he knows both. The guy's lost a cow. You know anything about it? He says no. But really, the guy who took the oath knew, saw the item and saw who had it, saw who found it. So he could have said something that would have been pretty helpful. And he denies it. In all these cases, the law is the same. Now, law is the same. Which way? Lema hilcheta. Dava me amad be'erbi chanina. Liftur, Shmuel amad lechiyuv. So this is machloket. Shmuel, we actually understand. He took a false oath about testimony, where he actually had testimony about the case, and he denied it and said, I don't know anything about the case. Therefore, he should be liable to bring the korban olevi yored. So that makes sense. But according to the Bichanina, he says patur. Why? Because he's only a single witness. A single witness can't do too much, right? So because if the single witness says, yeah, I saw that guy, so what you can't, the guy who lost the item cannot go and sue that guy based on one witness. If there's two witnesses that come and say, we saw Mr. So-and-so, he found your cow, we saw him with it. Then the guy who lost it can go to that guy and say, we have testimony that you have my cow, right? Where is it? You have to give it to me. But one witness, he wasn't harming the guy who lost it anyway, not much anyway, because that's limited. It's only limited things you can do with one witness. So what's that essence of the machloka between Rabbi Chanina and Shmuel? Bepluta dehanitane detanya hamashbia ayed ehad patur. Vilazab Rabbi Shimon mehayev. In general, regarding this type of shivuah, if someone who is makes someone swear, hey, you don't have testimony, right? But it's only one witness. So the Tanakama says here, patur, so that would be the same as Rabbi Chanina. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, even though there's only one witness, if he lies, he still has to bring a korban. Now, why? What's the reasoning for the machloket? Those who say chayav, Rabbi Shimon and Shmuel, they think that something that's potential money is like money. And in this case, even though it's only one witness, could be that with the pressure of one witness, listen, I have one witness who says you have it. Come on, now admit. So that could possibly be useful. Who knows? Maybe a second witness will come and then he could join the one witness. So if the one witness doesn't say anything, there's no chance it'll be helpful. If he says something, then there's at least potential that his testimony could lead to finding the item. And therefore, potential money is like money, and that's why he's liable. Whereas the Tanakama and the Bichanina say, no, it's potential money. Maybe if something happened, it could have helped. But right now, it's not actionable, and therefore, it's not actual money. And so that's the reason why they think that this guy is not liable, even though he swore falsely. He's only one witness. Amar Rav Sheshet, Hakofir b'pikadon nasa lav gazlan v'chaya ba'onasin. Rav Sheshet proposes a halacha that if someone denies that a deposit, right? Someone has a cow and he gave it to a shomer, right? Could watch this for me. Comes later, says, hey, you know, where's my cow? And the shomer says, I don't have it. I don't know what you're talking about. You never gave me a cow. He denies it. So once he does that, even without swearing, just by saying that, the shomer turns into a robber. Because by denying it, it's kind of the same as going into the other guy's house and taking it for himself. Even though he didn't go down into another guy's house, he got it in a permissible way. He received it as a shomer, but now denying that he has it or ever received it, so now he's basically stealing it because he's going to now keep it for himself. And there is an important difference in halacha. As a shomer, if something happens beyond his control, that it gets stolen or lost, then he's not liable. But as a robber, he is liable. So the second he denies it, he turns from the protections. He loses the protections of a shomer. And now if it dies or gets lost, now the shomer will be liable because he's treated as a robber. That's the opinion of Rav Sheshet. We're going to try to prove it And then we're going to also try to disprove it. V'tana tuna. Here we have a support from a braita. V'kichesh ba lamadnu onesh. Azara minayin tamon lomar lo techachashu. My love le'onesh mamon. And Pasuk says, if a person deals falsely, and there, from there we learn a punishment. And how do we know a warning? You can't punish someone unless the Torah gives both a punishment and a warning. Because in the different Pasuk, in Vayikra says, Lo techachashu, do not deal falsely. So now we have both, and this teaches the punishment for someone who denies a deposit. So what punishment? Is it not talking about punishment of paying money for accidental damage that happens, that before when he was a shomer he would have been protected, but now that he denied it, he is liable for onasin, he has to pay, and this would be a good proof for Rav Sheshat, right? Lo le'onas shivua, not necessarily. It could be talking about a case where he not only denied it, but also swore to the denial, right? He swore, I don't owe you anything, I never received anything from you. And the punishment we're talking about is the punishment for swearing falsely about a monetary claim, where you have to add a fifth and bring a korban asham. That's what it's talking about. V'hamad dekatani sefa v'ishteba, v'chal t'desha delai ishteba, dekatani sefa. V'nishba al shaker, lamanu onesh. Az raminayin t'modomar lo t'shakeru. U'medesefa d'ishteba, resha delai ishteba. Says, no, that's it's not talking about money. It's talking about shivua, right? The punishment for swearing falsely. But then we reject that, and we say no. Look at the continuation of that very braita, explaining the continuation of the pasuk, that is talking about someone who swears falsely. So since the continuation is talking about someone who swears falsely, it must be that the resha, the beginning of what we quoted here, is talking about a case where he denied it, but without swearing falsely, and so he is liable. So look at the sefa. If, quoting the pasuk, if someone swears falsely, we learn the punishment for swearing falsely. What about the warning? It says elsewhere, do not lie. Since that clause is talking about someone who swore falsely, and he's liable for to bring a korban hasham and a fifth, so the resha that says he is liable is not for an oath, but rather, as Rav Sheshat said, it is a good proof for just denying that you have it, you become responsible for onasim. Amri idi v'idi idi ishteba, but we reject that answer. Could be both the resha and the sefa are both talking about a case where he swore falsely. Kan shehoda. Kan shebau adim, atu adim chayab onasim, oduye ode chayab keren vechomesh veasham. So one part is talking about where he admitted himself. The other part is where the other half is where witnesses came. If witnesses came, so that's the first half is talking about where witnesses came. So the guy swore falsely. Says, I don't have your item. I don't know what you're talking about. And witnesses came and said, actually, you do have it. We saw you that he gave it to you as a shomer. We saw that you have it. So in that case, chayav means he's liable for onasim. If it gets lost or stolen, he will have to pay for it because now he turns into a robber. But not just by denying it, unlike Rav Sheshat. Rav Sheshat said, if you just deny even without a vow, you're liable for the monetary damages. According to this, they're both talking about where he not only denied it, but also swore falsely. And when this has come, then he's turned into a robber and he has to pay if it gets stolen. But if he admits on his own, then he does have to still pay the extra fifth and asham. But he was not be liable if it got stolen. He doesn't turn into a robber because he admitted it. So that means he's saying, I admit it and I'm going to return it. He wasn't trying at that point to keep it for himself. So in fact, there's no proof here to the statement of Rav Sheshat. Now, we can actually bring a challenge to his law. Metiv Rami bar Hama. ושכנגדו חשוד על השבועה כסעד, אחד שבועת העדות ואחד שבועת פיקדון ואפילו שבועת שב. Rami Bar Hama's challenge is going to come from a Mishnah in Shavuot. The beginning of the Mishnah says that usually a defendant makes a swear to not pay. But there are some cases where the plaintiff is the one that makes a swear and forces money out of the defendant. When would that happen? It's where the defendant is not trustworthy because he is already proven to be a liar. For example, if the defendant had in the past made a vow about a testimony that he has and he was lying, or he denies that he has is holding an item for someone else as a shomed and he's lying, or even just a plain old lie that won't affect anybody else but is still a sin to heaven, that you're lying about some item and say it's something else, that person is untrustworthy. And therefore, even if they, we're not going to make them vow because we're not going to trust their vow anyway. In those cases, we allow the plaintiff to make the vow and extract money. Now look at this list and notice what's not on it. If you were right that someone who denies that he had, that he is a shomer, he denies that he forgot the deposit, he's called a robber even before, even without swearing to it. Well, then you, the Mishnah should not include only cases where he made a shivua, even when he does not swear. If he only denies and you never and says you never gave me anything, he's already a robber. A robber is an ev, is a rasha, and as such, that person will not, should not be able to swear. The fact that the Mishnah does not include just plain old denial, but only includes cases of a swear, means that he is not considered a robber unless he swears falsely, not if he denies. That's the challenge to Rav Sheshat. But we try to answer. Amri, hacha maiskinan dekei ba'agam, delav kefirahu, de sabar, ishtamitna le, ade azilna, umaitina le. We're talking about a case where this cow that the shomer is holding for him actually is in the swamp. The shomer didn't do a great job. He wasn't watching it for an hour or two, and the cow went into the swamp. So it was not so good, but it's still there and it's safe. And so the shomer, when the owner of the cow comes and says, "Hey, where's my item?" he panics and he says, "Oh, I don't have it. I don't know what you're talking about. You never gave me anything." But in his mind, he didn't have in mind to steal it. He just is buying time. And he says, "Listen, I'll bait him now. I'll go get it from the swamp and I'll bring it to him then. And I'll say, oh yeah, I forgot. Yeah, I now remember I did have it the whole time. And here it is." And so since his intention is not to steal, but only to buy time, that's why in this case, that's why the Mishnah here does not include such a guy, because this guy is not considered a robber. He would not be liable if an ones happened. But Rav Sheshat was talking about where the shomer did have in mind to lie in order to steal. He wasn't trying to buy time. He really was trying to deny it and keep it for himself. So, right, depends on the case. Teda, damarav idi bar avin hakofer bemelve kasher le'aidut v'pikadon pasul le'aidut. And actually, a proof to this answer is what Avidi bar avin says. He makes a distinction between someone who denies a claim about a loan. That's okay. Even if you deny a claim about a loan, you can still bear witness, but not if you not deny a claim about a deposit. What's the difference? Well, if I owe you $1,000 and you come and say, "Hey, pay up," I say, "What $1,000? You never gave me anything." In that case, I can still testify, assuming that I'm not trying to rob from you. I'm just trying to buy time. I don't have it right now, so I'm denying it so that I can go and find out, try to figure out how to get the money, and I'll pay you tomorrow, I'll pay you later. So therefore, just buying time does not make someone a rasha, who cannot testify. Whereas, if it's talking about a deposit, and it's a case where he really has the deposit, and he's not giving it back, because he wants to steal it, then he's a rasha. So we see that it does make, there is a distinction between these cases. And it's more likely if he's alone, then he's just buying time. If it's a pikadon, he probably has it. And so then it's more likely that he's stealing. But in fact, you could have a case, like as we just said, where he has a deposit. It's just that it wandered off into a marsh and he needs to buy time till he gets that. So it all depends on the person's intention. And therefore, Rav Sheshat could very well be right. There are cases where if he denies it, but his intention is to buy time, that's okay. He's not liable. He's not a robber. But if his intention is to steal it, then he becomes liable to Onasin, and he becomes a robber and wouldn't be able to testify. Now we challenge that answer. V'hamad Ilfa, Shivua kona, Shivua hidekanya, aval kefira lakanya. Ilfa says that once someone testifies falsely that, "I'm not shomer, I don't know what you're talking about," he acquires the item. Not that He can keep it and doesn't have to pay for it. He has to pay for it, but he acquires it, meaning it's his and he's responsible no matter what happens to the item. He's no longer shomer. It's his now, and he has to pay for the theft of the item that he now has. But look at how Ilfa said it. Only if he makes a swear, then he acquires it. But just denying it without a swear, that sounds like he does not acquire it. And therefore, he's still a shomer, holding on to an item that belongs to the owner. In which case, if an ones happens out of his control, then he would not be liable. This is a challenge to Rav Sheshat. But we can answer that. This also is talking about a case where he is not liable because he intends to return it. It's just in the swamp right now. But as soon as he gets it, he will return it. So that's why he does not become responsible. He does not acquire it. That's one possible answer.
ואחר כך באו עדים פטור שנאמר ולקח בעליו ולא ישלם כיוון שקיבלו הבעלים שבועה שוב אין משלם מאמון. It could be that this statement of Ilfa שבועה קונה is actually in accordance with Rav Huna, who said in the name of Rav a pretty surprising law. He says that if someone claims, hey, you have $100 that of mine, and the other guy says, I don't have it, I don't know what you're talking about, and he swears and then that I don't have it. And then witnesses come and say, he gave you $100. You borrowed it, right? You do owe him. You're wrong. Nevertheless, even though witnesses come, that borrower does not have to pay it back because it says, v'lakach be'alav, once the owner accepts the vow of the borrower that he didn't have it, that's it. The borrower no longer pays. The case is closed and you can't reopen it, even though witnesses come and say that he was lying all along, right? Once the owners accept, so he doesn't have to pay anymore. And that's what it means, that someone who makes a vow, kone, he actually acquires it. It's his. It's hard to understand. How could it be that he doesn't have to pay when the witnesses come and say so? Could be that because he made a vow and there are consequences, a punishment for taking a false vow. So he only gets one punishment, and the punishment for the vow is more serious than the payment. And so this is kim le b'drabah mineh. And that's what it's talking about. So that's the only reason why he doesn't have to pay the vow when he swears, but why he doesn't have to pay the money when he swears. But if he didn't swear and they wouldn't have that extra punishment, then he would have to pay. And so that would be in accord with Rav Sheshat. And so that's a second answer to save Rav Sheshat's theory. Baruch Adonai Olam. Amen v'amen.